going to look, because of the brevity of the meeting, we're going to look at four points in the book of Numbers that I think are very, very essential for us to learn. We're going to read in the book of Numbers, and we're going to commence in chapter 6. The book of Numbers, and in chapter 6, and this is the chapter of the Nazarite, and it is with a little bit of reserve I go into this, because it's really a chapter that you need a lot of time to and really go into thoroughly. So you'll understand if there are sections of it, and I hope it's not the most difficult sections that we avoid, but the sections of it, they all need to be really dealt with. But let us read it together. Verse 1, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when either man or woman shall separate themselves to vow a vow of a Nazarite, to separate themselves unto the Lord. We're going to look, because of the brevity of the meeting, we're going to look at four points in the book of Numbers that I think are very, very essential for us to learn. We're going to read in the book of Numbers, and we're going to commence in chapter 6. The book of Numbers, and in chapter 6, and this is the chapter of the Nazarite, and it is with a little bit of reserve I go into this, because it's really a chapter that you need a lot of time to and really go into thoroughly. So you'll understand if there are sections of it, and I hope it's not the most difficult sections that we avoid, but the sections of it, they all need to be really dealt with. But let us read it together. Verse 1, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, when either man or woman shall separate themselves to vow a vow of a Nazarite, to separate themselves unto the Lord, he shall separate himself from wine and strong drink, and shall drink no vinegar of wine, nor vinegar of strong drink, neither shall he drink any liquor of grapes, nor eat moist grapes or dried. All the days of his separation shall he eat nothing that is made of the vine tree, from the kernels even to the husk. All the days of the vow of his separation there shall no razor come upon his head, until the days be fulfilled in which he which separateth himself unto the Lord, he shall be holy, and shall let the locks of his hair of his head grow. And all the days that he separateth himself unto the Lord, he shall come at no dead body. He shall not make himself unclean for his father, or for his mother, for his brother, or for his sister, when they die, because the consecration of his God is upon his head. All the days of his separation he shall be holy unto the Lord. Now, for the sake of time, verse 18, and the Nazarite shall shave the head of his separation at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and shall take the hair of the head of his separation, and put it in the fire, which is under the sacrifice of the peace offerings. And the priest shall take the sodden shoulder of the ram, and one unleavened cake out of the basket, and one unleavened wafer, and shall put them upon the hands of the Nazarite, after the hair of his separation is shaven, and the priest shall wave them for a wave offering before the Lord. This is holy for the priest, with the wave breast and the heave shoulder, and after that the Nazarite may drink wine. Now, into chapter 8, please. Verse 20, and Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel did to the Levites according unto all that the Lord commanded concerning the Levites, so did the children of Israel unto them. And the Levites were purified, and they washed their clothes, and Aaron offered them as an offering before the Lord, and the Lord made an atonement for them to cleanse them. And after that went the Levites in to do their service, in the tabernacle of the congregation before Aaron and before his sons, as the Lord had commanded Moses concerning the Levites, so did they unto them. Now, the 12th chapter. We're going to take it that you know the 12th chapter. It's sometimes a wrong thing for a preacher to assume that the audience knows these things, but we just have to do that. Verse 10, and the cloud departed from off the tabernacle, and behold, Miriam became leprous, white as snow. And Aaron looked upon Miriam, and behold, she was leprous. And Aaron said unto Moses, alas, my Lord, I beseech thee, lay not the sin upon us, wherein we have done foolishly, and wherein we have sinned. Let her not be as one dead, of whom the flesh is half consumed, when he cometh out of his mother's womb. And Moses cried. And Moses cried unto the Lord, saying, heal her now, O God, I beseech thee. And the Lord said unto Moses, if her father had spit in her face, should she not be ashamed 7 days? Let her be shut out from the camp 7 days, and after that, let her be received in again. Now, the 25th chapter for our last reading, verse 7, just verse 6 to catch the whole event. And behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moses, and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel, who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand, and he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman, through her belly. So the plague was stayed from the children of Israel, and those that died in the plague were 24,000. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, hath turned away my wrath away from the children of Israel, while he was zealous for my sake among them, that I consumed not the children of Israel in my jealousy. Wherefore say, behold, I give unto him my covenant of peace, and he shall have it, and his seed after him, even the covenant of an everlasting priesthood, because he was zealous for his God and made atonement for the children of Israel. May the Lord bless the reading of his precious word. I would like this afternoon, by the help of the Lord and by the help of his gracious Holy Spirit, to turn your mind this afternoon to these four very interesting incidents in the book of Numbers. Now, these books, like the book of Numbers, are very, very neglected passages of the Word of God. And yet, contained therein are many of the things that reveal to us the very clear mind of God about many, many serious matters. I'm sure that you were listening in the reading, and we constantly try to bring to your notice that little phrase, and after that, and after that, and after that, three times repeated, and after that. After what? That's the point. After what? Well, in this first section in chapter 6, we find that the principle of a Nazarite life has to be seen before he takes the wine and receives the joy at the end of his Nazarateship. And I thought about Nazarateship before joy. Nazarateship before joy. We think, well, if we separate ourselves and if we give up the husk and the kernel and the wine and the vinegar and our social life and all that, well, we're going to lose all our joy. But really, this passage is going to teach us that it's only after his Nazarateship that he can drink wine. And that true joy only comes and stems from this Nazarite kind of life before God. We'll deal with that in detail. When we dealt with chapter 8, it is the priest, the Levite. And before he can come into the sanctuary of God, though he is born a priest, though he is linked with Aaron, though he is fitted and looks well, there is one prerequisite before he operates in the sanctuary of God, he must go through the sequence of purification. I'm thinking about Nazareth nightship before joy. I'm thinking about cleansing before service. The third thing we read concerning was concerning Miriam and concerning Aaron, and how they speak against their brother Moses, and how in a scandalous way they try to say, does God only speak through this? I'm sure you noted in the passage that in the original, Moses is not in it. Does God only speak through this? You know, when people are out of tune with people, you know, when they're friends with people, everyone is Mr. and everyone is first names. But you know, when you're not in touch with people, you just miss out the bit that's respectable. This Moses. And I want you to think about discipline before movement. The camp stops. The cloudy pillar stops. And until the discipline is passed upon Miriam, then there's no movement in the camp at all. And I want you to think about, and after that, after the discipline, then the movement, then the progress. That is only as we're passing. I notice too that Phinehas is going to get an everlasting covenant of priesthood. And he's going to have it in his family. And how does he get it? He only gets it after he exhibits that zeal for God. And I was thinking, zeal before honor. We would love honor. We would love a place. But not too much zeal and not too much zeal for God involved. We would like a place. But he gets his place because he did what God thought should be done. And he did it in a very beautiful way. Though not to our minds naturally. But he did the thing and saw it through. Not only piercing the man, but piercing the woman. And piercing the very fruit that might have been begotten of that dreadful association. And so God thought the world of this man, Phinehas. Everyone that reads the Bible, they know that you can be an Israelite and yet not a Nazarite. Every Israelite was not a Nazarite. Did you know that Nazariteship was not open to males only? If any man or any woman shall vow the vow of a Nazarite, holiness is not the right of men. Godliness is not just the right of men. Making progress in the ways of God is not the right of men only. You know, the only meeting in the church that I ever see in the Bible, I could be corrected, a men's only meeting, is in Acts chapter 20, when Paul calls for the elders. I take it that that is the only men's only meeting. Holiness, discipleship, progress, righteousness, godliness is open to men and to women. For those who are critical, I do know that after that statement, it is always addressed to him. 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 As if the women don't seem to think and feel that they need to separate themselves unto the Lord. I tell you this, that no man or elder or preacher will ever make progress unless there is a united front with man and woman consecrated to this work to which they have put their hands to. I notice too that the separation of the Nazarite wasn't cutting this and cutting that off and not believing this and not believing that and a whole lot of prohibitions. If he will separate himself unto the Lord. 8 times in that chapter, it's unto the Lord. Unto the Lord. Unto the Lord. This isn't separation from. That will come. But it's separation unto the Lord. That's where we're unbalanced. That's why no one listens to us. That's why it's a false balance unto the Lord. Because, first of all, our separation is not unto the Lord. I should separate myself for the Lord's sake, and the Lord's glory, and the furtherance of His kingdom and His cause. And so the 8 times that it's mentioned in the chapter, it is unto the Lord. Oh, there are prohibitions. For you can't be living unto the Lord and living as you like. You can't say you're separated unto the Lord and have the same desires and same passions and same cravings and same needs as the normal person that is round about you. And so in come these prohibitions, and I would love to take them one by one, I really would, and then I would love to tease them out. You know? Tease them all out as to what they really mean. It's so important. But you know my time is limited. No razor was to come upon his head. That was the opposite to what he normally was. No razor was to come upon his head. You know, for an Israelite, to look like a woman was a desecration. And so when the commandment came, it would seem as if he stood out from all of us. That is, his hair began to grow, and it got into locks in his head. And everyone saw that this man had made a vow unto the Lord. No razor shall come upon his head. For me to grow my hair long, I feel more upward. I sit there and I say to myself, are the brethren seeing I'm badly needing a man's haircut? You can imagine a man with hair down. It's all right, we see the hobos and the boys about the streets like that. But, you know, Christian men, think about it. Think about Israelites. It was against their very nature not to have their hair properly shorn. And you know, to be a Nazarite is to go against your nature and go against the things that you really would like for yourself. I cannot really linger on that point. No wine. You know, God meant this man to be of a distinctive character, and he meant him to be of a sober disposition. You know, this is someone, you mean he never once smiled? I would be sad if he never smiled. Do you mean that he was just all sober sides? No, that's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying this, that the character of his life was this, that he wasn't intoxicated. His judgment was never, ever impaired. He wasn't taking of the wine that his heart and his passions and these things would be inflamed. He was a man of a very sober disposition. Isn't it a strange thing when you come to the New Testament that is one of the only things that Paul says to the young men? He says to the young men that they be sober. You see, youth is a time of frivolity and lightness and, casuality, soberness, sobriety. Not only so, he says, no vinegar. It's acidity, isn't it? You know, where you have to be sober, there's to be no acidity in you. You can see through the meetings there's a lot of people been drinking vinegar, can't you? There's an acidity about them. There's a sourness about them. You know, while he was to be sober, God never wanted him to be sour. Because if he was sour, what does all this separation mean? And what is all this? Is it not happiness? Isn't it not high living? Isn't it not elevation? Isn't it not what God intended the nation all to be anyway? While there's sobriety, there's to be no acidity in his person. You know, it said he hadn't to eat the grape from the husk to the kernel. You know, from the husk, that's the most outward part of the grape. And the kernel is the pip inside it, right to the inside of it. Not only has he not to be marked by public things, but he's to be just as careful about private things. He's not only not to sin presumptuous sins, but he's to be careful not to sin sins of ignorance. You see, as we and I saw people going down the street with dogs and a muffler on, we would say, oh, he's away to the dogs. Well, you'd be quite right. But you know, as some of the brethren said, we'll go to the golf course today and we'll have 18 rounds at the golf course. Well, it wouldn't be just so bad, would it? If someone was seen standing, waiting at the theatre there in, you know, in Belfast, oh, we would say, he's awake. He's gone. But you know, we just sit every day and take in the same thing in a smaller dimension. I actually can't see any difference. From the husk to the kernel, he's not only to be void of public sins or enjoyments, but private things right into the pip, right into the, says someone else, you're getting too near the, you know, my friend, no happiness comes until you've got all this in order, and then the joy will come by and by. Is there any more about him? Well, he must not come. He must not come near to a dead body. You know, a dead body is a very sacred thing to us. And I love that. But you know, out there, they couldn't leave it a whole day. Corruption sets in right away. And he must not come near anything at all. Though he's not part in it, and he had nothing to do with it, he's not to come within the realm of anything that has a corrupting influence at all. I say, I would love more time, but you know what I mean, don't you? An audience like this, we've not to go near anything, and we've to abstain from every appearance. Not just the evil, but we have to abstain from even the appearance of the evil. I noticed, too, that if there was any family defilement, he had not to come nigh unto that family defilement. He had to keep himself pure, even for his father and mother, even for his brother and sister. Oh, it was different if they died, but family defilement. We've not to let things go because of family. We've not to agree with people because they're our family. You know, the Nazarite is a man beyond family. He's a man beyond the world. He's a man beyond everything. And he's a man beyond corruption. These are all very, very important things. And then, when it did come to the end of his separation, and you could vow a vow for 3 months, a month, 6 months, a year, it was what you determined. It's what you determined. It wasn't binding on you. It was voluntary. Isn't that lovely? It was voluntary. There was no pressure. There's no pressure on you to be a Nazarite. There's no pressure on you to be this or that. But if he willed to do it. And then it came to the end of it. And when his separation was finished, then he came and stood before the priest. And he stood before the priest with a peace offering. And he stood before the priest. And you know, when you come with a peace offering, you're really saying, I'm in fellowship with God. That's what a peace offering's all about. It's all about fellowship with God. The burnt offering's all for God. You know, the meal offering for God. The trespass offering and sin offering is different. But the peace offering is that most beautiful offering where I say, I'm in fellowship with God. And then he comes with his peace offering. And the priest takes the razor and shaves off all his locks. And he puts it on the fire on the top of the peace offering. What is the point I want to make to you? Simply this. All that past accomplishment, and all that past consecration, and all that past separation has all been burned up on the altar of God. You know, any progress that any of us have made, you know, I've forgotten it long ago. It's all to be burned up. We've not to lie back in past accomplishments and past enjoyments. And it says, after that, he shall drink wine. What's the point I'm wanting to make? It's simply this. That only in this life that is separated for God, and only in this life that is lived for God, is there any enjoyment at the end of it. In the Christian life, there's enjoyment at the beginning of it, and in the midst of it, and in the end of it. But there's no real joy, and no real happiness, unless we have really separated ourselves unto the Lord. When we come to chapter 8, It is the cleansing of the Levites. You know, when a man in Israel saw a Levite walking down through the camp, he had some strange thoughts. He didn't say, now there's a chap that doesn't go to his work every day. There's a preacher, he's got an easy time. Oh no, he didn't say that at all. When a man that was a firstborn son in Israel looked upon the Levite, he says, that man's taking my place. I should have been there. I should have been serving God. Maybe he's a very wealthy Israelite. But really, God intended the firstborn of Israel to be priests, every one of them. And then God changed it. And he gave the Levites, that tribe to have no inheritance, no land, no future in this world. And when the firstborn saw him, he realized that that man was taking his place. You know, the servants of the Lord, you may not know this, the servants of the Lord are the servants of the Lord. But didn't you know also that they were the servants of the church? You know, the servants of the Lord are not freelance. The servants of the Lord just don't do what they like. The servants of the Lord are actually accountable to their assemblies and to the church. And if the church commend them, then the church has a right to know why they're doing, where they're going, why they're doing it. And if the church commend them, also that they were the servants of the church. You know, the servants of the Lord are not freelance. The servants of the Lord just don't do what they like. The servants of the Lord are actually accountable to their assemblies and to the church. And if the church commend them, then the church has a right to know why they're doing, where they're going, why they're doing it. And if the church commends them and has fellowship with them and shares charity with them, then servants of the Lord just can't up and go and come and do what they like. The church deserves respect. And the priest took the place of the firstborn son. No, he was a son of Aaron. He was chosen of God. But God says, you're going to deal with my sanctuary. And although you haven't got a squint eye, and you haven't got a hearing aid, and you haven't got a stick and a zimmer, for you remember this, you could be born in the priesthood and never function. Go back. If you had a broken foot, if you had a broken hand, if you hadn't been able to produce fruit, you were bad. You got the food. God cared for him. But God never intended anything short of perfection to be representing him in the sanctuary. The gold was perfect. The wood was perfect. The linen was perfect. The colors were perfect. Everything was perfect. And as far as manhood could be, the men were intended to be that way. That's why an elder must be blameless. And that's why if you go preaching every Sunday night as a deacon, you must be blameless too. And if you take your Sunday school class, God intends you as a deacon to be blameless as well. And if you keep this hall, and I don't know who does it, and I never asked either, and I don't ask. I tell you this, every service of God demands that the man must be blameless. We're representing God. And if we're moving in the sanctuary, after they had purified themselves and they'd washed their clothes, after that, they went into the sanctuary of God. Brethren, listen. Nazarite ship comes before the great joy, forgetting yourself, not living to yourself, not pleasing yourself. It's only after that that the joy comes. Sanctuary, what a good lot of men in here would love, with me as well, love to get nearer, love to be holier, love to be more powerful. Listen. It only comes after cleansing. Cleansing is absolutely essential before we move in to the sanctuary of God. Cleansing before service. Disciplined before movement.
says someone. I never like preachers that speak on discipline. Strangely enough, I don't like to speak about it myself. And if you've listened over the years, it's not a subject that I've taken up much with you, is it? There are subjects that are far sweeter to deal with than discipline. But this is an essential subject. You know, this problem in chapter 12, this problem started in a family. It started with two brothers and a sister. In fact, it started with a brother and a sister. Moses had nothing to do with it at all. I'll never forget Mr. True in this passage. I can't forget it. And I had only wish I had a mind to think these things out. He says, Moses and Aaron and Miriam were at the top of the ladder. Imagine one father and mother producing three people like that. A prophetess, a prophet, and a high priest. What a production for a family. They're right at the top of the ladder. Everybody is admiring them. Mr. True said, the other two kicked him, and he fell to the bottom of the ladder. And I love this. He says he just lay there, and he never said. Would you not be getting up that ladder? And even though you couldn't get up the ladder, would you not have been shouting up that ladder? And if I get back up there, he just lay there, says Mr. He just lay there. Lay there for what? Lay there for God's vindication. Oh man, listen to me tonight. There's many a man in this room, and he's known all the time he's been right. And he hasn't the proof of it. And there's oftentimes he can't do nothing about it. And he waits. And he waits. And he waits. And the pain of the waiting nearly gets gall in his breast. But if he can just wait a little while more. And God will vindicate the right. And God will condemn the wrong. Don't fight. Stand for God. Tell the truth. Quote the scripture. Don't fight at the door. Don't quarrel. It's not Christ-like. It's not charitable. It's not becoming. Ah, my friend, the cloud stood still. No movement. The camp stood still. Maybe that's why our meetings are not moving, you know. To someone there's no open problems in our meeting, I tell you this, if there's an inward heart of jealousy in any breast, and every breast is capable of it, you three come out, outside the camp. You three come out here. And God points the finger. He says, did you not think it an evil thing to speak against my servant Moses? What did she say? And she's in the front. Does God only speak through this? Has God not worked through me? Did I not beat the timbrels? Did I not sing on the other side of the Red Sea? Am I not known to be a spiritual woman? The end of the matter is this, that God smote her with leprosy. Notice he didn't smite Aaron. There's someone you think they were both guilty. So they are, but not guilty in the same degree. You know, there's degrees of guilt. You know, Ananias and Sapphira, you can see it clearly, there was both degrees of guilt. His guilt was one thing. She connived with it. That was another thing. The judgment was the same, but the guilt was different. What am I saying to you? God turned her a leper. Leprosy. Leprosy. You know, she didn't know what her brother knew. Her brother one day put his hand in here, and he brought it out. And he knew there was leprosy within, but she never learned there was leprosy within. If she had learned it was leprosy within, it never would have come without. If we learn what's within here, many a circumstance would never come to pass. It was the prayer of Moses that touched me most this afternoon as I looked over this. Oh God. Oh God. Heal her now. Oh, don't bring family shame. Don't let the camp know. Keep it within the family. Shut it up. God says if her father had spit in her face, She would be outside the camp 7 days. And she was outside the camp, and the camp stood still. 7 days. Do we want movement? Do we want to make progress? Do we want the cloudy pillar to move and the fire by night? Keep before you, brethren, that as long as we're in the flesh, we'll need to administer divine discipline in the assembly. Mr. Darby said in one of his collected writings, he says, God would rather have discipline than numbers. How strange. We would rather have numbers than discipline. Movement after discipline is past. And after she's been out 7 days, by the way, you know, don't you? You never read of her again. Thank God you never hear her voice again. Or you never read until you read these words. And Miriam died. Oh, my friend, remember, movement is dependent upon carrying out divine discipline. Zeal before honor. I've only got 3 minutes. Zeal before honor. How many men in this room would love honor? Maybe you've dreamed of speaking at some conference or being an elder or getting an article in the magazine or something like that. Maybe you've got some vain notions like that. You know, my friend, honor comes after zeal. This is the sin of Baal Peor. This is through Balaam. And Balaam couldn't curse God's people, but he corrupted them. And nobody can curse God's people, but they can be corrupted. And here's a blatant sin. And a prince of the house of Simeon comes in, and he brings in a princess from the house of Moab. And we would say, well, they've got their class right. Do you know what I mean? They've got themselves into the right class. You know, they're marrying in their class. And he's a prince. Ah, wherein lies the great failure of the testimony of God, and it's this. That if some ordinary person does something, oh yes, everyone's unanimous and the judgment is passed. But when some prince does something, ah, the judgment is slower. And we're not so keen. It says that they come in the sight of Moses. Did you see that? Says someone, why did Moses not do something? Just read your Bible a little bit further back. It says that Moses took a wife of Midian. And you know, sometimes we do things. And in years to come, we weaken ourselves to do the right thing by God. Things that in the front of it, for he had married an Ethiopian woman, in the face of things, it looks all right. But the years will tell and circumstances will arrive and we'll be faced with things that we must just stand and look on. But there's a man in the congregation that doesn't need to look on. And he doesn't say to Moses, will I? He doesn't say, we'll hold a meeting. He doesn't say, I'll see the elders. Here's someone in the congregation that knows what's to be done. And you know, he's usually working with a knife to take the call out from above the liver and to dissect the offering and to put it in its parts. You know, the priest isn't used with a javelin. That's a soldier's weapon. But you know, the priest takes a javelin and he goes out after them. Why? Because they were going to flagrantly sin in the public place. And he took it and he pierced them through. And listen to what God says. He was zealous for me. We would have said, you're too quick, you're too cruel, you should have considered others. There was only one thing that Phinehas considered. One! He didn't care if he lived or died. He only lived for one thing, and that was this. Now, there wasn't a day worthwhile going on in Israel if God's glory wasn't secured. And if public sin was not condemned, and discipline was not passed, what does he get for that? Oh, says someone, I would be afraid to look on a man that would do that. Listen, God says, I give to him the covenant of an everlasting priesthood because he did what I would have done. The camp, if it's not clean, is nothing. And the man that dealt the fatal blow to the sin and the sinners was the man that was honored with a covenant, an everlasting covenant. Now, just for the scholars, did you notice that it was a covenant, but not a covenant and oath? You see, if it was a covenant and oath, then it never could be changed. But God anticipated the Melchizedek priesthood, the everlasting priesthood, the priesthood without cessation, the priesthood that neither began or ended, neither father and mother. And you'll find that the Melchizedek priesthood is covenant and oath, whereas the Aaronic priesthood is only covenant only. Will you remember those 4 points for a Sunday afternoon? Nazariteship comes before joy. That's very, very important. Cleansing comes before the sanctuary. That's very, very important. Discipline, it is operative before this movement in the camp. And finally, zeal always precedes honor. Shall we pray?